You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz, and today is 7/26/21. Well, in busier times, Rick Rule, you know him from Sprott. Everybody knew him. Now, Rick likes to be referred to, you want to be referred to as investor, speculator, and all-around expert. Well, I added the expert, but you know it's true. And hey, you're, for lack of a better term, semi-retired, or maybe you're just doing what you always wanted to do and probably spending more time at it than you used to. But if you got a question for Rick, we'd love to hear it. Just send us an email, kl@carrielutz.com. But Rick, it's great to have you back. And this is the first time I've spoken with you since you redefined your priorities and your position. How are things going?
Carrie, it's a pleasure to be back with you, first of all. I would describe my current state as more emancipation than retirement. I'm still working fairly hard, but I've divorced myself from any regulated capacity, and I've also divorced myself from any managerial capacity. So I'm sort of now doing what I want, when I want, for whom I want. And so life, in fact, is grand. Thank you.
Well, that's always good to hear. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with a move when it's a move for the better. And we see your interviews around YouTube and around the internet continuing unabated. So that's a good thing. And, you know, I guess you got to know when it's time to really change. And what do you think it was that made you say, like, I got to do something else at this point? I've been doing this for so long. It's time to evolve.
If you go back to 2011, 2012, my money management business had grown so big that I was spending more time managing the business than I was managing money, which I felt was dishonest. So I sold my business to Sprott so that I could be part of a team that had more managerial competence, being part of a bigger whole and, of course, taking advantage of the Sprott brand. In 2013, I said to three important constituencies, my customers, my partners, and my shareholders, that I would see them through the bear market, that I thought the bear market was going to be long and vicious, and I thought that all three constituencies would benefit from my presence. Fast forward to last year, it was pretty clear that we'd gone from a bear market into a bull market. I had fulfilled my commitment. I was 68 years of age. And the frustration in dealing with securities regulations, which often impeded my ability to service my customers as opposed to aided my ability to serve my customers, those frustrations became more and more dramatic at the same time that the very size and success of Sprott was causing me to spend more time on administration again rather than less. So I just decided in good old cowboy fashion it was time to hang up the spurs.
Okay. Well, Lutz's first rule of business is any business you go into, you will wind up spending the largest amount of your time doing the things that you like to do the least, and you will spend the least amount of time doing the things you like to do the most. It's just a fact of life, and you kind of have to go with it. So, but now your time is your own. So we could get your candid opinion. What do you see the state of the real economy, both in the United States and the world? Is everything all hunky dory, or are they kind of like hiding the bad news?
I think some of both. I think there's surprising underlying strength. Some of that is false, of course, due to artificial liquidity. But we also are continuing to enjoy the reduced capital requirements in the private sector that are affected by technological advances. The big thinkers would have us to believe that the relatively strong economy that we're experiencing worldwide is a consequence of better government, which is laughable.
I'm laughing at that.
I suggest that it's a consequence of the increased application of technology, including information technology, which makes the pace of new technological advances faster and increases their utilization. I certainly believe that a lot of what we see masquerading as a good economy, which is to say, as an example, strong bond markets despite negative real interest rates, and strong equities markets are artificial. Consumer spending in some markets, that is to say Western markets, is also partly artificial, given quantitative easing and so-called stimmy. There is, however, an underlying strength that is surprising, I think mostly as a direct consequence of technological innovation, and particularly in frontier markets. The ability, as an example, that capital-starved African markets have to move ahead fairly rapidly, as they are doing, by employing technology and bypassing some of the capital-intensive stages that the rest of the world had to go through, means that economies, as an example, like Kenya and Malawi, are really surprising us to the upside.
So looking beyond our shores, and perhaps the emerging economies are enough to keep the world afloat, but the new normal, I mean, it feels similar to the old normal, but it's got some striking differences, doesn't it? I mean, just take a walk down Main Street, you see empty storefronts, all these things that have gone on.
Well, certainly, Kerry, some of the things that concern me is that I think that we're overdue for a reckoning. I've been investing for 45 years, and it seems, whether I deserve it or not, every 10 years, the economy, every 10 or so years, the economy delivers me a good spanking. I remember the 87 crash well. I remember the tech wreck in 2000 well. I certainly remember 2008, although I remember it fondly as opposed to the way other people remember it. And I suspect that we're overdue for a reversion to mean. Doesn't mean it has to happen. I also suspect, and I'm not an economist, Gary, I suspect that the economy that we've enjoyed since 2008 is more a function of artificially low interest rates and stimulus than it is increases in productivity or increases in world trade. And it's difficult for me to believe that the world didn't experience more real economic difficulty as a consequence of the virus-induced shutdown. So it wouldn't surprise me if after this wonderful, you know, 14-year-long party that we've had, that we didn't experience some form of hangover. That's normal and natural. And I'm very concerned about what might happen to the extent that the market ever got control of interest rates again. You know, this 1.2% yield on the U.S. 10-year Treasury, were it to revert to mean, the U.S. 10-year Treasury would be yielding 150 basis points over the CPI stated rate of inflation, which is to say that the U.S. 10-year, if the market were to take over, would be yielding almost 6, which means that 30-year fixed mortgages would be 7. And the impact of those interest rates on the economy, I think, would be just that type of hangover I described earlier. So that sort of thing lurks in the back of my mind and keeps me nervous.
Yeah, as well it should to all of us, because, like you say, reversion to mean, how long can they keep this up before the dollar really sinks and other unintended consequences kick in? But it seems like the rest of the world is kind of very content to inflate in tandem with the U.S. so that on the surface, nothing ever happens. And that kind of brings us to precious metals. That's exactly the kind of market you would expect to see the metals going wild. And yet we're in this kind of dull patch. You know, we had a substantial pullback in gold and silver, hovering around $1,800 gold. What do you think is the rub here? What are we witnessing?
Two comments there, Gary. First, people are strangely confident right now. I suspect it's because most people confuse liquidity, which the market has lots of, with solvency. They ignore the fact that we're insolvent because they have cash. I think that's partly historical. We haven't had a real good slapping since the early 1980s, so people are inclined to believe that things only get better. You buy the dips that the big thinkers of the world can, in Canadian parlance, stick handle our way through any challenge. I don't happen to believe that's true. But the other thing, Kerry, is if you go study earlier precious metals bull markets, what you'll see is that periods of time like the one that we're going through are normal and natural. Cyclical declines are a function of secular bull markets, and these declines can be 12 to 18 months in duration, and it's not uncommon in a bull market for the gold price to decline by 15 to 25%, even while that decline is outpaced by the declines in precious metals equities. Finally, I would say that the malaise was, at least from my point of view, triggered by the fact that the Fed for a while stopped yield management and allowed the yield on the U.S. 10-year Treasury to rise from 60 to 175. Now that the yield has backed off to 120 basis points, I suspect that gold investors in the next 6 to 12 months will be pleasantly surprised by the recovery.
Interesting. So basically, it's similar to kind of the Dow theory, I guess, where Dow postulated there are three cycles taking place at once. Long-term cycle, so you're in a long-term bull or bear market. Intermediate term, where you might be going up, you might retrace all of the bull market's prior gains or close to it for a short period of time, 3 to 6 months, he postulated, as long as a year, you said 18 months. And then you have your day-to-day, which is kind of just the noise, and it goes up, it goes down, and then you look at the media and they find reasons for why the market's doing whatever. So it's just effectively just being a market then.
Don't just survive. Thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Osino Resources is a Ross Beatty-backed gold exploration company in mining-friendly Namibia. Osino's district-scale land package is situated near two producing gold mines, one of which Osino's management team previously developed and sold to B2 Gold. Osino's founders and management are experienced mining professionals who have already successfully developed and sold two companies in the past 7 years. Osino has a tight share structure, and with its current treasury, it can self-fund the advancement of its gold discovery into at least 2022. This is an exploration company with drills turning that you'll definitely want to pay attention to. Osino trades in New York under the ticker OSIIF and in Toronto under the ticker OSI. To learn more, go to OsinoResources.com. That's OsinoResources.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
I think that's right. If you... you know, I've talked in my interviews with you before about the Barron's Gold Mining Index, which is a very inclusive gold equities index that goes back 60 years. And if you observe the cyclicality and volatility of precious metals equities markets going back 60 years, the phenomenon that you just described, which is the interplay of various cycles, but also the extraordinary volatility in the sector is one that you're struck with. And I would encourage all of your listeners to study that chart, not from the point of view of technical analysis, but rather as a visual aid to examine, if you will, the DNA of bull markets and bear markets and prepare themselves for the volatility and the cyclical declines in secular bull markets. I believe that all markets are driven, in the most part, by fundamentals, but they're exacerbated in both directions by behavioral aspects of individual investors. And it's important, I think, to arm yourself in a way that you can take advantage of volatility as opposed to taken advantage of by volatility.
Well, as always, you like always co-opt my next question, Rick. You just have a habit of doing that. So I was going to say, is this a real buying opportunity here for these miners, for high quality ones? And obviously, you have to use a very fine sieve to find those companies, because there are a lot of, let's just put it charitably, lifestyle companies out there. And hey, I'm all for lifestyle, but my lifestyle, I'm not into like keeping other people in the lifestyle they've become accustomed to, if you will.
Well, you made three important points there. In the junior part of the business, there's probably 2,000 and allegedly junior mining companies in the world. Probably 300 of them are viable, which means that probably 1,700 are junk. So if you're going to be in the sector, you need to develop the capability of separating, in movie parlance, the good, the bad, and the ugly. As to a buying opportunity, I think this depends on who you are. Too many people who buy into the gold thesis have too much of their net worth in gold and gold stocks. I've ranked a lot of portfolios where people have told me that they're effectively 100% all in precious metals. And I think that's a mistake. But if you are reasonably involved in the sector or under-involved in the sector, if you measure the sector by net present value of future cash flows measured against current gold prices and measure that against enterprise value, in other words, how much money are you paying for a certain level of free cash flow, the mid-market part of the industry is the cheapest it's been in my career. So from my point of view, despite the fact that I'm substantially invested in gold mining equities, I'm increasing my exposure.
Interesting. And I remember you telling me, you know, going back to what you said initially, that you told Sprott and your constituent groups there that you would be there till the end of the bear market, and then you would look for greener pastures, if you will. And what you said to me was, you know, you went through three resource stock sector crashes, and, you know, stayed patient, stayed invested, and you made it through making more, and you expected this one, the fourth, to be bigger than ever. You still stick to that thesis?
I do, with the caveat that I'm not really a market forecaster, and I'm not really an economist. I'm a credit analyst. I believe that the fundamentals behind the gold price rise are quantitative easing, excessive debt and deficits, negative real interest rates, and the historically small percentage of savings and investment assets involved in precious metals. And I believe that as long as all of those fundamentals are intact, that the gold price goes higher. And I don't see very many viable circumstances in which those four factors would change anytime soon. I look too, Gary, historically, at the fact that precious metals bull markets are traditionally decade-long affairs. Many people say to me, you know, we're 3.5 or 4 years into this gold bull market. Have I missed the boat? Well, if past is prologue, no. These things last 10 or 11 years. And people mistake the dimension. The gold price has gone from $1,000 to $1,800. So people say, have I missed it? In the 1970s bull market, the price went from an admittedly price-controlled $35 to $850. In the 2000 market, the gold price ran from $253 to $1,900. I'm not saying will, but could gold in this cycle go to $5,000 or $6,000? Certainly. Absolutely. Particularly measured in a currency like the U.S. dollar, which is being debased by quantitative easing, debt and deficits, and negative real interest rates. I'm not saying it would. I'm not saying it will. But I think that the backside, that is the second 5 years of this bull market, will be more dramatic than the first five years will. And I think that you add on top of that a bull market in industrial materials that will come about later in this decade as a consequence of society's underinvestment in it. And I think you'll have a bull market on top of a bull market. So my own belief is that the sun is shining on what I do and will continue for some time.
Okay. And you just made a really good point that that doesn't get paid enough attention to, and that is the underinvestment in the mining sector. Now, this is a sector that everybody loves to hate, whether it's the government, environmentalists, the communities that are often the beneficiary, but they feel not big enough beneficiary of the sector. As a result, the mining companies have really played it safe for a lot of years, and we haven't seen the money go into this sector that we need. You know, on the one hand, I had this conversation. Oh, we want these electric cars, two EVs in every garage. I mean, that might have well have been the campaign slogan from the last election. On the other hand, we don't want to allow them to build any more copper mines or nickel or lithium or whatever. We want to stop it all. Do you see the disconnect there? And do you think we come to an epiphany where we say, if we want all this stuff, then we have to be able to allow the components, the base components of it, to be produced?
You'll recall that H.L. Mencken once said, voters almost always get what they want, usually good and hard. You know, the only thing that you can do is prepare yourself for circumstances that you think are inevitable. Certainly, with regard to the first part of your question around the negative perception around mining companies, to some substantial extent, we deserve that lack of trust. The environmental record of the mining business when I got into it in the 1970s wasn't too bad. It was deplorable. And so we deserved to be viewed as despoilers. Secondly, the industry was, and to some extent still is, corrupt. The lifestyle companies, which is to say stealing from your own shareholders, is one thing. But the political games that were played, the bribes, the fact that taxation went to the center, but the regions literally and figuratively got the shaft, was problematic. And then, of course, in the decade 2000 to 2010, when we experienced wonderful increases in commodity prices, including gold, the companies were so mismanaged that on an industry-wide basis, cash flow per share declined. It took special skill to have declining free cash flow per share when your product went from $250 an ounce to $1,900 an ounce. What's happened since is that the industry has been, relative to other industries, starved of capital. And the management teams that run the companies have been unusually constrained in their investment outlooks because the investors who own them aren't willing to give them the free rein that they gave them in 2010. As always, Kerry, the industry's fighting the last war.
Yes.
I just believe that higher commodity prices for any commodity that's necessary for the continued ascent of humankind are going to do not merely well, but really well. Look, as an example, at the Resolution copper deposit in Arizona, which was discovered about 25 years ago. And it's truly a world-class deposit, well over a billion tons of 1.5 to 2% copper. Spectacular deposit. We're 20 years into this thing. I suspect it'll be another 10 years before they're able to put it into production. If they're able to put it in production, if the copper price rose to $6 or $7 a pound, it'll take 6 or 7 years to develop the necessary supplies to bring the copper price back down.
Yeah.
People forget about these things, but I think they're going to be reminded of it pretty dramatically.
Yes, and we have seen a dramatic rise in copper prices, especially from the March 2020 lows. But really, it could just be a foreshadowing of what's about to happen, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see copper prices go lower before they go higher, because I wouldn't be surprised to see a recession. I wouldn't be surprised to see a temporary hiatus in demand for copper on a global basis. But looking forward, not just electric vehicles, as you described, truly the electrification and urbanization of the world means that copper demand will hold at least steady. Well, copper supplies for 5 or 6 years, you're going to fall every year, year on year.
Interesting prognosis there. And that doesn't help the industry either, with declining prices, attracting scarce investment dollars, and moving these big projects along. And you know from your own experience, you don't just start pushing one day and then you take a break. This is consistent, sustained effort over a decade to bring these projects online. And there's got to be a better way to do this, Rick. What are your thoughts on it?
I don't think there is a better way to do it. I think the industry is always going to be messy. It's always going to be cyclical. It's always going to be volatile. And if you understand that, you'll make money in it. Well, your competitors will continue to lose money. I think saving the world is too big a challenge. You need to save yourself and your tribe as best you can.
Look out for number one. Look out for yourself, your family, your friends, your community, and then worry about the rest of the world in exactly that order. And I think that's very valid because, hey, a lot of people want to save the world, but nobody seems to really have any idea how to do it. So in the meantime, you got to be around to fight the next battle. And that's what you're doing. So just tell us where we find you, how we sign up for your mailing list to get your latest missives.
Yeah, I'll give everybody incentive to do it. I'm reached personally, by the way, at rick@ruleinvestmentmedia.com, all one word. But to give people an incentive, I'm, as always, willing to personally rank people's natural resource investment portfolio. To do that, people can go to a web form, sprottusa.com/rankings. Enter your natural resource stocks. Please no pot stocks. Please no technology. Please no crypto. Not things I don't know about. I'll rank them 1 to 10. I'll comment on individual issues where I think my comments might have value. And for people who include charts in the question and comment section, I'll send them the Barron's Gold Mining Index, which we referred to earlier in this interview. And I'll send them a different chart, which is a 100-year chart, which catalogs the price of commodities relative to other investment classes going back 100 years. And I think it makes a wonderful case for my bull market thesis in commodities.
And we wholeheartedly agree with you. If you got a question for Rick, you can always send me an email, kl@kerrylutz.com. We'll forward it off to him and get you an answer. And sign up for your free newsletter at financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Rick, it's always enlightening and entertaining and interesting to have you on the show. Really appreciate it. Glad your quote-unquote retirement is going so well. And, you know, you're probably one of those people that never worked harder until the day they retired. So,
well, it's certainly nice to work only at the things that amuse me and not at the things that aggravate me.
Hey, and that in itself is a worthy retirement for you, someone like you, Rick. Really appreciate your coming on. As always, be well. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Kerry.
Thanks for listening to Kerry Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.